I'm Al Filreis, and this is Poem Talk at the Writer's House, where I have the pleasure of convening three friends in the world of contemporary poetry and poetics to collaborate on a close but not too close reading of a poem. We'll talk, maybe even disagree a bit, and perhaps open up the verse to a few new possibilities and, we hope, gain for a poem or poems that interest us some new readers and listeners. And I say listeners because Poem Talk poems are available in recordings made by the poets themselves as part of our Penn Sound Archive, writing.upenn.edu/pennsound. Today, I'm joined here happily in Philadelphia at the Kelly Writer's House in our third floor Garrett studio by Jessica Lowenthal, friend, poet, teacher, friend of me anyway, and friend of lots, teacher, editor, brilliant convener, daily of poetic happenings, Drupal expert, associate publisher of Jacket 2 magazine, director of this very Kelly Writer's House, and so on, and author of As If in Turning, and along with Leanne Brown, a graduate somehow, sometime of Brown University. Am I right about that?
That's right.
I'm right for both of you, aren't I? Okay. And Suyun Juliet Lee, author of Underground National Factory School, and That Gorgeous Feeling, great title, Coconut Press, who grew up 3 miles from CIA headquarters Virginia, Northern Virginia, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Teaches at the University of the Arts here in Philadelphia, edits Corollary Press, a chapbook series devoted to multi-ethnic innovative writing, and writes poetry reviews for The Constant Critic. And by Leanne Brown, born in Tokyo, raised in Charlotte, North Carolina, author of, among others, Polyverse, The Sleep That Changed Everything, and the Voluptuary Lion Poems of Spring, publisher of the great Tender Buttons Press, which publishes experimental poetry by women, who divides her time, I think, between New York City and Marshall, North Carolina.
That's right.
So, hi, everybody.
Hi, Al.
Leanne, thank you so much for making the trip.
My pleasure.
This is great. Jessica, back on the third floor.
Great to be up here.
Yeah. You make me happy when you're here. Juliet. Your first time on Poem Talk?
I know, and my first time on the third floor here. I didn't
know
there was a
third
floor. It's very cozy.
A lot of people listening to Poem Talk have never been on the third floor. What would you say in a word?
It's minty.
Minty? What does that mean?
The walls.
It's newly painted.
Oh, you don't like my color. Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to take a picture of us so we can post it.
I feel like I'm in a Joseph Cornell collage box.
Mm. Oh, I don't know how to take that. But anyway, I know why we're here in this minty room. We've gathered here to talk about a few poems from Lainey Brown's book, Daily Sonnets, published by Counterpath Press in Denver in 2007. It's a book dedicated to, quote, Benjamin and Jacob, my daily sonneteers. As soon as I read that, I got all warm inside.
Well, it sounds like Mouseketeers.
Yeah, Mouseketeers, my daily sonneteers. You can hear them, Mom, Mom. And I'm continuing the dedication. Inventors of, quote, real-time sonnet, unquote, and, quote, dailiness, unquote. So we're going to listen to recordings of and then discuss 5 of the daily sonnets. These include 2 of Brown's fractional sonnets. We'll explain that, I guess. 2 of the sonnets written in collaboration with her children, the aforementioned, and 1 sonnet of the sort called Your Personal Amulet. So we'll hear them in order, and so that you can really hear them distinctly, I'll say what the titles are. 6/14 Done Sonnet, 2/14 Sonnet, In Chinese Astrology You Are a Snake, I'm a bunny in a human suit, and Protector Number 2, Your Personal Amulet. So here now is Lainey Brown reading variously from Daily Sonnets.
This next fractional sonnet is based on employing chance operations to John Donne's Holy Sonnet Number 5, and his couplet is, I am a little world made cunningly of elements and an angelic sprite. 6/14 Done Sonnet. I am a liturgy worsted made cupidity of elixir and angelica spumone. I am a minute orb made subtly of rudiments and innocent goblin. I am a little live oak made cupbearer of Elizabethan and angstrom sprawl. 2/14 sonnet. This undressing at security checkpoints would never have gone over with the Victorians.
There are a lot of collaborations in this book, and a lot of collaborations with my children. So a couple that I wrote with my kids. And you'll recognize a different voice. In Chinese astrology, you are a snake. But at home, you are a kitty knight. You don't have any bunny in your body. You ate a bunny, but you're not a bunny king. To make a person, you need two people. Otherwise, you'll just get a big belly and the baby will never hatch. Your favorite food is syrup. Jewel Jim the pig, our pet caterpillar, red, gray, yellow, and black, is searching for a bramble leaf to eat. My rice bowl is not full. Jacob kicked me in the top of my nose. We pushed each other off of the couch. I'm a bunny in a human suit, so people don't try to eat me when I go shopping. Is it not winter at his house? Daytime never ends. What is that living in our curtain, gray and yellow and red? Our neighbor rakes a tree. Does an apple cry, done going down? These protective sonnet series in here were conceived to be worn as amulets, and I'm still hoping to find an artist who wants to collaborate on this. Protector number two, your personal amulet. This sonnet is your personal amulet to be worn in instance of need, or constantly held in the mind, occurring here and elsewhere at this moment. This sonnet is sent without cunning to cull a particular phrase from your lips to enlist another protector in this age of malcontent benefactors against an ironclad schooner, feudal kingdom, dismemberment by jubilant crowds, strangely indifferent faces, heat and dust besides suicide implicating others.
Juliet, which of those five rivets you? The one that you start with?
Oh, the one that...
thinking about this, of those five.
Well, my favorite one is the one where she describes how she's in a bunny suit.
One of the two collaborations with her kids.
Yes, I'm just looking
at... In what sense does it disclose itself as a collaboration with the kids?
Well, to me, it's the language that she's using, where just that playfulness with the bunny and the short, simple lines, don't try to eat me when I go shopping. I can just hear these kids whispering to her.
Leanne, which, without knowing anything about the details of the compositional plan, just from your own instinct, what would you say in either of the kid collaboration poems is got its source text in things that the kids said or contributed?
Well,
maybe give us a couple examples.
I think the 128, I'm a bunny in a human suit, the more I look at it, the more I think the entire thing is quotation from the kids. Mm. I kept thinking maybe one or two lines were her commentary or weaving, but I think it's all kid language.
Let's look at Daytime Never Ends.
But the way she reads it is so much like her kid. Like,
it really
Daytime
is.
Never ends. Like, they're so tired, they want to go to bed.
Yeah. But I'm hearing that...
a mother, too.
I'm
right?
hearing yeah. the mom, too. Okay. Mm-hmm. Jessica, you've
right,
been
right.
there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I actually really appreciate that what she's describing is this way to create poetry out of the dailiness, and the children's language provides that real content that's just constant. I loved that.
Let's jump quickly, and we can go back to these, but let's jump quickly to the larger project then. It seems to me that the larger project of the Daily Sonnets is to make something of the constraints of dailiness, partly because... one is a mom with two young kids and needs to, you know, dailiness is the key. There seems to be a concept here that's driving the project. How would you characterize Let's go around. Juliet, how would you say in a phrase or two what the project is?
Sure. Well, to me, what I appreciate about this is the livingness of the poetry. She's not trying to enact some kind of like muscular virtuosity over the language. She's really just living through it and displaying for us how the creative use of language just is, can be a praxis, like just genuinely in and out of your every moment during the day. And I think especially for a mother and an artist, that's a really important thing to share with others. So I, even though I'm not a mother, I take a lot of encouragement from her example in these poems.
Jessica, what would you, how would you characterize the project?
I would say it's a way of thinking about form and a way of saying that form shouldn't come from just history or just come down to us, that instead form can come from the way we live. So it's that livingness enacted through a form. And in this case, the form might be dailiness, but the form also of the sonnet allows dailiness to intersect with that other kind of historical form. So and the sequencing and the simultaneity that are created through a sonnet sequence.
I think too, sonnets are about like desire and idealization and love. And I feel like those are also in here too. So the sonnet's a nice little container for her.
To make a person, you need two people. Otherwise, you'll just get a big belly and the baby will never hatch. Your favorite food is syrup. Jewel Jim the pig, our pet caterpillar, red, gray, yellow, and black, is searching for a bramble leaf to eat. My rice bowl is not full. Jacob kicked me in the top of my nose. We pushed each other off of the couch.
Leanne, why sonnets?
Well, one thing I was going to say is that it's in dialogue with Bernadette Mayer's work, definitely. Her book, Sonnets, which I published with Tinder Buttons Press many years ago, and Lainey Brown was involved with that press very strongly, and we collaborated a lot. So we were very involved reading those sonnets over and over and thinking about, you know, how Bernadette was remaking the sonnet form from the ground up. And this is sort of Lainey moving it on further in another direction. And I'm also thinking about Kathy Wagner's work, where she wrote in the room with other people when she had a young child. You have to, that was the rule of the poem, you had to write when other people were in the room, because you don't get your work done if when you're a mother.
How about Leanne Brown? Same thing, right?
Yes,
at certain points.
Oh yes.
Right. I mean, I think of you as someone who brought your daughter with you to poetic events, and am I overstating it?
Oh, it's exactly right.
And so what impact does it have? Let's not just talk about you, but what impact does it have when you permit the daily influxes of the poetic moment to kind of determine the only form that's available to you, the dailiness, right? Otherwise, if you wait long enough, you'll never get to it because the kids are that demanding. The day will never end.
Writing during.
Right. But anyway, I sort of answered the question. I didn't mean to. I wanted you to
Felt. I just keep going back to this moment when I first had my child and doing just very, very mundane activities, even like changing a diaper and feeling like it was in some kind of performance art kind of moment, because everything was, because a dream would appear from years before, not even just the night before, but years before. I was in this very strange state of consciousness. And to take advantage of that, I think it's what these poems are doing. And from, you know, and that kind of fluidity that happens to your mind when you're in this
state. As if writing or even reading sonnets is a daily habit or practice, as opposed to something that's to be cordoned off and preserved for a special moment when the kids are no longer around to intrude upon the form.
And it's like a meditation practice as well, and that's where the amulet sonnet comes in.
Say a little more about the amulet in that regard. And then I want to go to the fractional sonnets. Anybody?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, please.
Julia.
Oh, you know, I was just thinking about that, you know, the sense of a poem as an amulet. And there's so, even though this is very of the moment, it's daily, she's really conjuring up this kind of like ancient sensibility of what poetic language can do. It's charged. It's more meaningful than our standard use. So there's this magical quality to it. And I feel like she's just making that really evident by using that word, the amulet. Like, this is meant to be some sort of like spiritual sigil, you know. And I just think about maybe something that's been lost or forgotten a little bit, but the magical incantatory possibilities for poetry. And it's a really nice touch on her part, you know. And I also think about how she's conjuring up that, like, you know, ancient history in poetry, but she's also wedding it to just the concerns of a mother, you know, where you have worries. Yeah. You have
protecting
to,
protecting from what?
Yeah.
A really crazy list of stuff.
Well, name some. I mean, let's
well,
do
in
it.
This particular list, it's jubilant crowds and different faces, dust besides. I mean, it's almost like a protection from random intrusion or the stuff that could not fit into the daily, but now has to. It's a very strange reversal of the process in a way, because it's all fitting in there.
Oh, I remember the thing I was going to say, that connection was, this sonnet is sent without cunning, relating to... This is a. I am a little world made cunningly. The
John Donne
that she's playing with, and like the opposite of that, like saying that a mother, you know, as a mother, she's having to do this, you know, without cunning. It's like a different kind of generosity.
What's the angelic sprite in the Donne poem? Leanne, you're smiling.
Oh, but I thought it was the children. I mean, this energy and this language that's coming
for Lainey
forth.
Brown. It's
right.
Children. What is it
but
in
it's
the
also
Donne poem?
The energy of I thought it was of creation. It's like the poem. I mean, my student actually quoted this to me the day we were making sort of Joseph Cornell box type things, and he said they reminded him of this sonnet. Like they were little worlds made cunningly. There were these little
so
rooms.
That is,
you know?
So in John Donne, in the Holy Sonnets, is this a metapoetic moment where he's talking about the poem?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what about Night? Juliet pointed the turn. The three lines are, I am a little world made cunningly, line one, of elements and an angelic sprite, line two, but black sin hath betrayed to endless night my world's both parts. What are the both parts? Jessica?
Body and soul. Or
keep going.
If we're talking a metapoetic, it's the language and its meaning.
What if elements and angelic sprite are opposites?
Well, I
what
just
if
think
that's
of the,
part of the binarism?
I just think about the turn in the sonnet, you know, like the Italian sonnets have that, you know, with the 6-8 construction.
Yeah.
And actually in the Amulet poem demonstrates that turn where we have this beautiful invocation of, you know, this is what my poem is. And then it switches where all of a sudden it's in this age of malcontent benefactors, you know, then we get the darkness. And I feel
so
like...
So what are the... I mean, I'm trying to... get us to simplify for listeners who don't know the Donne and don't know Lainey. What are the both parts that Donne is referring to?
Well, I think it means the physical world, the elements, the element, the periodic table, and
so there's the elements
the
and the angel,
right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, it's interesting that Lainey's writing a whole book about elements now becoming personified and
currently
embodied.
She is.
Yes.
But what's so interesting about the daily sonnets is the word day that's embedded in daily, the day that never ends, the Mother's Day that never ends, and the day is really the space and time for the poems. So Donne is talking about the turn comes in the third line, or at least one turn, and it turns to endless night from the day, in essentially the world made cunningly. This is all, you know, the daily sonnets are about the day. But anyway, so she does a 6/14th sonnet. What does it mean to do a fractional sonnet from a classic 14th?
I just think it's such a great pun in the title, 6/14th Donne. It's only D-O-N-N-E and D-O-N-E. So it's just a fraction.
I'm so done with Donne. So what has she done?
But this the way that the children manifest in these, especially the two-liner, is that it's done in two lines. That's all she has time for because she has to go get in the car and take him to school or whatever. You know,
I love the idea of saying, I only have time for two lines, but you know what? I'm going to call that a poem and move on to the next one.
And that's
one.
The poem.
That's cool.
Yeah, you catch
Jessica,
it.
Jessica, you just are so jazzed by this.
I loved the fractional sonnets. I mean, I think they're funny. The other one, which is in some ways more of a throwaway, the
this undressing at security checkpoints would never have gone over with the Victorians.
Yeah, I feel like there's a punchline, a bunch of punchlines having to do with couplets and Victorians
and the rhythm
sexuality.
Of it, the musicality of it is so wonderful.
And how do Victorians feel about sonnets? You know, so I feel like the Donne does similar work. It's a three couplets. It's some stuttering. It's also just playing because you have time to play and you want to play when you have kids.
Yeah, and I was thinking too about like just abandoning perfection, you know, like I like how she describes how, you know, she chooses these broader projects where one just composes all the time to get this huge field of writing. And then your writing's not so precious. You know, you don't have to worry about perfection or getting it exactly right. And I love that the fractional sonnets gesture at that. You know, like, I think that, I mean, a lot of us teach writing too. And there's this real sense from our students that every little thing they do is just so darling, you know, like...
So what she's saying to Dunn, it's obviously moving in a different direction than the Dunn, because the Dunn is, I'm a little world made cunningly. And what Lainey Brown is saying, a little world made cunningly, I don't know if I can pull anything off. It's not going to be like a perfect little world. This is not an autotelic poem situation. How's that?
Yeah, I think you got it right.
So, oh, thank you. And I'm the host.
A plus.
You're giving me an A plus. You come to my house and you give me a grade.
What I like about these is the whole phenomenon that happens when you do things with like things like noun plus sevens or permutational, you know, random chance operations that or Ulippian operations, which are not random chance. You're going through the dictionary and putting these the words in that come up, and that but it turns into this other meaning that your mind is trying to make meaning out of. So I'm a liturgy. Worsted, like the wool, like you're weaving this wool and you're knitting or something, made cupidity of elixir and Angelica Spumoni. It's like really, it's playful, but it's also solemn, and it's got, it's such a Lainey poem, you know, it's got this kind of femininity, but like this, you know, meditation, you know, in it.
6/14 Dunn sonnet. I am a liturgy worsted made cupidity of elixir and Angelica Spumoni. I am a minute orb made subtly of rudiments, an innocent goblin. I am a little live oak made cupbearer of Elizabethan and angstrom sprawl.
I'm going to read from Lainey Brown's afterword from the book, and I'll invite all of you or any of you to comment. It sort of says what we've been saying, but it says it beautifully. And finally, after many years of controlled circumstances, the allowing in of all voices, all time, acts of collaboration with the daily news, with other poets, and with the bumpiness of days passing. And as the days pass, time is unhinged, and anyone or anything can speak. The dead, the imagined, the dictionary, the found. By the way, that wasn't all quote. There was some paraphrasing in there. But so what do you get from that, Juliet?
I just get a whole sense of roundness, you know, the fullness of what it is to be a working artist in today's world. You know, I think that we have a strong push in our society to just specialize, you know, and that I think really diminishes us as just people in the world, you know, and there's some nice resistance on her part that's very elegant, you know, and being open and allowing for these things to permeate through the writing and to manifest that for us.
Jessica, your thoughts on the comment?
I am really interested in what she included in her list of collaborations, that collaborating with the news, say, collaborating.
The dead, the imagined, the dictionary, the found.
Yeah, so that.
Daily news,
the idea
other poets.
Of collaboration there is some other people might call it appropriation or some kind of a different act, but she's making it a more generous conversational act.
This is not plums from the icebox.
Right.
I mean, it's not a subject-object situation like the dailiness of the high modernist stealing the plums and making a poem of it. It's inclusive. The children get named. Mm-hmm. It's obvious that some of the lines are appropriated from them, but they feel more like subjects than objects. Would you go that far? Or is that just being sweet and
nice?
Oh,
sure. No, they're very much collaborators. And the language that stuck with me from that quote was the word unhinged, because I think that's she's unhinging the form. She's opening the form. She's unhinging each, you know, the lines.
What do you think she means by saying after many years of controlled circumstances?
I think the whole, yeah, like we were talking about, like poetry has to be a project. Like this like, has to be the conceptual thing you lay out ahead of time. And this whole thing with form, and you're going to do this serious poetry, and we're, you know, and that now she wants to write about everything and be open to not just write about North Carolina or just about Tucson or some kind of element. You know, she's trying to include everything in poetry. And this is her project here.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I feel like, too. That's exciting to think about her work in a conceptual framework, because I think there's this kind of sensibility that conceptual means really reified, virtuosic in a certain way. And she's got a whole different approach where the concept is the daily, the round, the fullness, you know? And so to me, the idea of a conceptual project is the projecting, getting back into and out, you know, into the world through this practice, you know?
So controlled circumstances would be in that implicit binarism. Controlled circumstances would be the pure conceptualist, got a project, go through with it.
It's a scientific metaphor.
It's a little cold. And... oh, right. Okay. A controlled experiment.
And her husband's a scientist, but so she's got that in the house.
After many years of this, right. I'm using it, but turning towards something else. Mm-hmm. So in a way, you know, this is so not virtuosic that there's a tremendous amount of virtuosity in it, which I think is what Jessica likes so much about it.
I also think, though, in that phrasing, she's winking a little bit, because, of course, this is a sonnet sequence, and that's all about controlled circumstance or controlled lineation and lineage. Mm-hmm. So... to allow in the many voices within a very controlled circumstance called a sonnet is taking the sonnet and uncontrolling it or
unhinging
it.
Yeah. I just have to throw it. Well, before I throw anything out, let's go around and say one last thing about this, because I think we could talk so much more about fractional sonnets as a concept. We could talk about the amulets. I just want to invite everybody to throw out one more concept that you would want a poem talk about this series to make sure it includes. Jessica, do you have a final thought on this?
I think we poked at this a couple of different directions, but I think gender is an interesting thing to approach in this series, particularly because the children are little boys, and there's discussion within the poem of sexuality and where babies come from, and there's some threesomes created, and it's an interesting way of taking some dualisms that are in the sonnet historically and saying these are not any more dual, and they're not straightforward, and they're not about traditional coupling. And as a mother, that's an interesting thing to be able to do, because there are traditional couplings involved in being a mother, but she's making also parent children, parent multiple voices. That's fascinating.
Juliet, you have a final thought that you want to add?
Wow, I'm just thinking about what you're saying about the coupling, and that just makes me think about the actual forms of these things, you know, like she's resisting that closed couplet, you know, even though she's sometimes visually presenting it to us, like even back to that Dunn sonnet, so it's these couplets, but we get three of them, you know. I feel like there's a lot of really interesting things happening with the form, which we haven't been able, like the actual line, you know, delineations on the page that we haven't had the opportunity to really talk about. So
say a word or two about that a little further, about the form.
Well, just, you know, the fact that she's, the number of lines she's choosing, the way that she's breaking them, the way they're presented on the page. I feel like there's so many different reimaginations of the sonnet happening here that you could just talk, you know, have a whole poem talk just on that, on the way she's visually presenting these things, how she's choosing her line breaks, how she's reestablishing sonnet, you know.
Great. Thank you, Leanne.
Well, that's sort of what I was thinking about. I wanted to point out my favorite couplet of these is, Jacob kicked me in the top of my nose. We pushed each other off of the couch. They're exactly the same length lines, but they're, of course, lifted, I think, from life, but they're paired as a couplet. Like, we're talking about the coupling, but just that kind of hearing the musicality of daily language and then putting it into this very classical couplet, you know, and that's, we were talking about the form, but you know, just recreating that, but hearing it, you're just open, you know, and you hear it in the world and you get it down.
I agree.
And she's giving permission for people to do that. She's helping people.
She's
to
in
hear
the
that.
Line of people giving permission.
Right.
I mean, you know, your mention of Bernadette Mayer is really crucial, because there's clearly a line. And I keep thinking of Bernadette Mayer. You could pick almost any Bernadette Mayer of a certain period and get some of this. But I'm thinking of a poem called Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where, you know, she's upstate somewhere and the baby is young and crying and the days just go, and the dinner takes forever, but then dinner is over so early, and she's just so tired she can't write, so she watches an old Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which of course becomes this amazing thing, because in fact her body has been snatched by this alien being of the mother of a young child, and it just makes you think that, and I'm the dad who raised two kids for a long, long time, and I not the mom who raised two kids, but, you know, the dad who did. And I think about if I had waited 21 years to get my projects going, they might have been purer and, you know, sort of more classical. But 21 years is a long time, so I just wanted to do what I could at the time. And I just think that I find that moving, I find it powerful, and I find it sort of Mayer's approach to this thing really not only empowered Lainey Brown, but so many of us really in that approach. Like, what the hell, I'm going to make something out of this. Mm-hmm. Well, we like to end Poem Talk with a minute or two of Gathering Paradise, which is a chance for several of us to spread wide our narrow hands to gather a little something really poetically good to hail or commend someone or something going on in the poetry world. So who wants to gather some paradise for us and make a recommendation? Juliet?
Sure. You know, just thinking about these poems and motherhood poetics, I was thinking of Hua Nguyen's new book on Wave, Hecate Lokia. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. But she's also someone who's writing out of a daily practice. She's working these really short, kind of fractured, almost like haiku shapes. And I feel like they're kin, you know? So if people are interested in reading more about, thinking more about dailiness, motherhood, I think Hua Nguyen's just someone who's so fantastic and doing such interesting work.
So spell the poet's name.
Hua, which is H-O-A. And her last name is Nguyen, N-G-U-Y-E-N. And she is one of the editors for Skinky Possum Press. And yeah. I think she's in Toronto now.
That's great. Terrific recommendation. Yeah. Leanne Brown, gather some paradise.
I was thinking about Caitlin Scholl's new book. It's really her first book of poetry called Make Believe. And it's out from University of New Orleans Press. And it's just a great combination of sort of investigative poetics and personal love, desire, writing, and collage. It's just a wonderful, massive first poetry book, Make Believe.
Fantastic. And I'll shout out Jessica Lowenthal's somewhat not visible work, putting together a wonderful series of commentaries in Jacket 2 magazine. A series of just fabulous commentators. We're trying not to do it as a blog. Why?
Well, it's funny.
Be honest.
We don't want the dailiness, in a way. though I think we want it to be more focused on poetry and poetics directly, to invite people to focus on specific thematic or archival or subject interests that they can explore deeply, rather than the things that hit them
so
randomly.
Somewhere between the blog, which gets sort of response to the world as it's hitting you that minute, and the article, somewhere between those two. Yeah. It's great. I highly recommend Jessica Lowenthal's fabulous editorial work. Well, that's all the bunnies in human suits we have time for on Poem Talk today. Poem Talk at the Writer's House is a collaboration of the Center for Programs in Contemporary Writing and the Kelly Writer's House at the University of Pennsylvania and the Poetry Foundation, poetryfoundation.org. Thanks to my guests, Jessica Lowenthal, Leanne Brown, Suyun Juliet Lee, and to Poem Talk's director and engineer, Chris Martin, and to our editor, as always, Steve McLaughlin. Next time on Poem Talk, David Wallace, a medievalist, Amaryse Kuchansky, and Lainey Brown herself talk about Caroline Bergvall's Via, a recitation of scores of translations of one line from Dante. This is Al Filreis, and I hope you'll join us again soon for that or another Poem Talk.